This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Sitting on the Mississippi, just 80 miles north of New Orleans, lies the city of Baton Rouge. It's a quiet town, home to Louisiana State Government and LSU football. Its population is largely conservative. But in the 2 weeks since Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans and sent its citizens searching for a place to stay, Baton Rouge has exploded. Officials believe the population of the Baton Rouge Parish, once 400,000, may soon double in size. And while residents have generously offered food, clothing, and shelter, there have also been some tensions. Longtime residents of Baton Rouge worry about how their city might change. They see traffic jams, overflowing schools, strained resources, and increased crime in their future. As officials look for ways to accommodate the newest residents of the city, they are also trying to ensure that the transition goes smoothly for everyone. The challenges ahead for Baton Rouge, it's Talk of the Nation. We particularly hope to hear from listeners in Louisiana today. Our program is heard on public radio station WRKF in Baton Rouge. And we want to hear from other towns taking in Hurricane Katrina evacuees. How is your city changing? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Stephen Moray, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Greater Baton Rouge. He joins us by phone from his office there. Thanks for being with us today, Mr. Moray.
Lynn, good to be with you.
Maybe you can give us a sense of how your city has changed in the last 2 weeks.
Well, it's a little bit of an awkward time, honestly. I mean, I think our hearts and minds are really focused, like most of the nation, on the New Orleans area and the recovery effort that has to be begun there. You know, really the future of Louisiana and even the future of the Baton Rouge area depends on a successful recovery. And we're all hoping that the federal government and Congress will do what's necessary to really make right what's going on in the New Orleans area. Of course, in the Baton Rouge area, it's created a huge influx in population, which has placed an enormous strain on our public services, on education, and so forth. But, you know, here, Baton Rouge is kind of known as the creative capital of the South, and we will find a way to take care of all those folks while they're here.
Are there noticeable changes in the life of the city?
Well, I think the most noticeable probably for most people is traffic. Traffic was already a little challenging and is now particularly challenging, in some cases doubling or tripling the commutes that some folks have to work, you know, back and forth each day. The other particularly noticeable change is in the real estate market, where just a few weeks ago there were several thousand houses on the market, and now Baton Rouge's market, which looked more typical of a southern city, is starting to look more like the markets in D.C. and Boston, with people making all-cash offers and bidding higher than the asking price in order to ensure that they get a place to live.
Yeah, and I imagine there aren't very many houses left.
Well, there aren't. In fact, as best we can tell, virtually all of the original inventory is gone, and what's happening now is that some folks, I think, are trying to be able to take advantage a bit of you know, the new influx in population. Folks that were thinking about putting their houses on the market a couple of months ago have decided to go ahead and put them on now.
Yeah. And what about for lower-income people? I mean, those who are getting into bidding wars, you know, and paying cash, they're probably pretty well off. What about housing for the less fortunate?
Well, I think it's really created a strain across all income levels because there's simply not enough housing to accommodate, you know, those that are here. But I think particularly those at the lower income levels have been affected. One of the things that our city leadership, our mayor, Mayor Holden and NOFEMA has been really focused on is providing intermediate-term housing for the very large number of evacuees that are here. Certainly the vast majority of them, you know, while the images on TV are the shelters and so forth, the vast majority of people currently staying in the Baton Rouge area are staying with friends and family. But there are tens of thousands of folks that are staying in shelters or other temporary accommodation, and then we've got to find some intermediate-term housing for them. And to the extent that there's a longer-term effort to rebuild the New Orleans area, recognizing that probably at least a third of the New Orleans metro area will not be inhabitable for at least 6 to 12 months, we've got to find some longer-term solutions as well.
Yeah. Now, of course, the Chamber of Commerce focuses particularly on the business community. Are many New Orleans businesses relocating to Baton Rouge? Will they be relocating there permanently? What does it mean for the business community there?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, I think that the most unfortunate thing is there was much more space displaced in the New Orleans area than we can accommodate in Baton Rouge. So what you're seeing is that basically everything that we have available in the way of commercial office space and warehouse space is being consumed very quickly, and so much so that there's a spillover to Houston and other cities around the country because we simply can't accommodate it all. I think that ultimately there will be certainly hundreds, perhaps 1,000 to 2,000 companies that do relocate here, and perhaps some portion of that will be permanent. But we do think that the vast majority of businesses that are capable of doing so are going to try to go back to New Orleans, and they need to go back because we need New Orleans to come back and to come back stronger than it was before.
We are talking about the challenges for the city of Baton Rouge, which is taking in thousands, hundreds of thousands of people from New Orleans. If you'd like to join our discussions or if you have any questions for Stephen Murray, who's president and CEO of the Chamber of Greater Baton Rouge, the number is 1-800-989-8255. And we have a call from Kelly in Baton Rouge. Hi, Kelly. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a Baton Rouge resident.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm seeing a lot of disruption in the local community here from just purchasing everyday commodities, from public health infrastructure, schools, traffic, and social service breakdown for just the locals.
And what have you seen personally? I mean, how are you experiencing this?
Well, I'm staying right now with a relative that was affected, not in the physically affected hurricane areas, but with the overload of the social services down here. They're dealing with so much right now from coming from outside. What was normally something that they would just have to do on a daily basis and keep up is getting, you know, these people, the locals, are getting kind of, they're falling through the cracks.
Now, are you a resident? I mean, are you from Baton Rouge originally?
Yes.
So are you concerned about these changes? Are you worried these are going to be long-term changes? The city's not going to be able to deal with them?
Well, I think that as far as social services, catching up on the people who rely on social services, you know, as their daily, you know, part of their lives, I think that will, you know, slowly repair itself when they get caught up. As far as the traffic situation, it's, you know, what used to be a 20-minute drive is now a 2-hour drive.
Really? That long? That big?
It's sometimes, and it's a hit and miss, you know. There's also, with just the fact of going to the grocery store now, you can go in now and... last night I went, and there was no food left, hardly. I mean, the meat, there was very, very little meat left, and what was there was frozen. So it's just the little tasks that are now putting such a hardship on locals.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them, from the ones that I've spoken to, feel like they've been left out, you know, despite the tragedy from the ones directly affected. It's affected everybody in the area.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your call, Kelly. And I'm going to ask Stephen Murray to respond to some of the issues that you just raised there.
Well, yeah, I think the issues Kelly raised are absolutely real. And one of the things that you're seeing is, in the same, in almost a similar sort of sense, that tremendous pressure was placed on state and federal authorities in the wake of the hurricane in the New Orleans area. You're now seeing in the Baton Rouge area the private sector placed under strain to be able to really change its supply chain and really beef up the amount of commodities and gasoline and all kinds of other things that need to be provided to the new folks that are in the capital region. At the same time, on the social service side, it's almost impossible for, you know, our public service to be able to really expand capacity overnight. So what's happening is that the mayor and his team have been putting together really a comprehensive request to Congress to say, look, we are absolutely prepared and willing and even desire to be the staging area for evacuees, for the rebuilding effort, for the business recovery effort. We owe that to New Orleans. We owe that to the country. But at the same time, there's a pretty big price tag attached to delivering those services, and we just ask to be made whole by the federal government, and we're certainly hopeful that they'll do so. On the traffic side, it's kind of ironic. The mayor had just put together the first comprehensive roads plan in about 40 years, and it's set to be voted on just a few weeks from now. I suspect that any opposition that there was to that beforehand will now melt away quite quickly.
All right. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck.
Lynn, good to be with you. Thank you.
Stephen Murray is the president and CEO of the Chamber of Greater Baton Rouge, and he joined us by phone from his office there. Joining us now is Chandra Simpson. She's a social worker in Baton Rouge, and she's opened her home to dozens of family and friends in the past 2 weeks. She joins us by phone from her home in Baton Rouge. How is it there at home these days, Ms. Simpson?
Hi. Actually, it's fine. I work today.
Oh, you're at work today. Okay.
I'm at work today.
Well, how many people do you have staying at your house?
Whenever there's a potential for a hurricane, we have upwards of 20-plus people in our home. And I do have a 3-bedroom home, so it gets a little crowded.
How many are there right now?
Actually, the numbers have dwindled down to 5 over the weekend. Some persons went back to Jefferson Parish. They went back home. Electricity was turned back on. And some displaced plant workers were airlifted back to their jobs. So
people are beginning to actually leave the city then, you're saying? It's not necessarily going to be permanent that there's going to
exactly.
be this many
some
people.
Exactly. Some persons are returning home.
Yeah. Where was everybody sleeping?
Actually, persons were sleeping on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
We were all over. The electricity was out for about 7 days, so we spent a lot of time outside until the wee hours of the morning, and then we would come back in, and the elderly persons would sleep in the bed, and the rest of us would sleep on the floor.
Mm-hmm. And then how was everybody getting around? Did you all have cars? Were the people who left New Orleans have cars? Or
yes, they brought their own vehicles, so mm-hmm. vehicles were not a problem.
What about food? Did you have a head chef at the house, or did
yeah.
you do all the cooking?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, my grandmother-in-law is the head cook at the house, so she cooked for everyone, so it's been fine.
Yeah. Now, what about other people who live nearby? Is this been a fairly common situation, the one that you had, where family and friends have come and sort of stayed with people for a while but are now beginning to leave? Is that common?
Actually, in my neighborhood, there are a number of persons who had upwards of 15 to 20 persons in their home, but they are beginning to find alternative living arrangements, so they are either returning home or moving out of state, going to other relatives.
Do you find that there's any tension between the people coming in and those who live in Baton Rouge?
I do. I do find, you know, because of the traffic problems or, you know, when you go to the store, as the previous caller mentioned, there's no food. No meat when you go to the stores. There is a little tension, but for the most part, Baton Rougeans have been opening up their hearts and their homes to everyone and have been relatively nice.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Chandra.
Thank you.
Chandra Simpson is a social worker in Baton Rouge. She joined us by phone from her office. We're talking about how Hurricane Katrina has changed and is affecting the city of Baton Rouge. You can send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. As the last residents of New Orleans continue to drain out of the city, upriver in Baton Rouge, new people just keep arriving. Experts arrive there to coordinate the disaster response. A horde of media call it a home base. And thousands of evacuees have filled every hotel room, sleeper sofa, and rollaway cot in the city. The short-term changes for this once sleepy city are dramatic, and people are only just starting to ask long-term questions about the city's new role. Baton Rouge is our subject today. If you're in the city, give us a call with your slice of life there. Our number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Don Kelly, a sergeant with the Baton Rouge Police Department, and he joins us by phone from police headquarters in Baton Rouge. Thanks for being with us today, Sergeant Kelly.
Good afternoon, Lynn.
What would you say are the biggest issues facing your department right now as a result of this influx of people into Baton Rouge?
Well, I'll give you a clue to one of them. I'm running late because I ran a 10-minute errand that just took 30 minutes to get back to my office. And as I think some of your callers have alluded to, we've got a heck of a traffic situation in town because of the great influx of evacuees and displaced persons who have temporarily or, in many cases, now permanently made Baton Rouge their new home. And as you have addressed, I think the population increase is going to be the biggest challenge we face in terms of the problems it presents with respect to the use of our infrastructure, particularly highways, roads, bridges, restaurants, hospitals, police department, fire department. We've got the same size infrastructure that we had 2 weeks ago, but a population that's anywhere from 30% to 50% or perhaps even higher. And so that is the challenge that our city leaders are facing, and as I heard Stephen Murray saying a little while ago, they're in the process of trying to make a request to Congress to try and make sure that we can expand as quickly as possible to accommodate what looks to be a significant and permanent change in our city's population and demographics.
Well, what about the police force? Are there enough police? I've read stories of local residents being worried about crime increasing with this large number of people coming into the city.
Well, that's one of the things that we're having to look at is how big a police force do we need, and of course that's generally tied to your population. And the big question right now is how big, when this all shakes out, will our population be? I don't know that anyone has a firm answer on that yet. There are certainly some smarter people than I who are making educated guesses at that, but we really don't know, once New Orleans is reopened, so to speak, the metropolitan area, how many people are going to leave our city and go back versus how many are going to stay here because they don't want to go back into an area and face that sort of crisis again, or perhaps because they have now started to put down roots here and their job has moved here and their children are enrolled in schools here and it's going to take months to get their home perhaps demolished and rebuilt. And so we've got to look at those issues, and our chief and our mayor are doing that right now in terms of, do we need to, as quickly as possible, increase the size of our allotment for police officers in the city, and that's one of the things that we are looking at doing. But it's very difficult to predict how this is all going to shake out and how big a department we'll need until we have a better handle on how many residents who are here at the moment are going to stay.
And we've heard some reports that gun sales have gone up 1,000% in some local stores. What does that reflect? I mean, is that reflecting a fear among residents of the cities of the newcomers, or what would you say that increase in gun sales represents?
I think that reflected a number of things, Lynn. First of all, most of those sales, I would venture to guess, were made within the first few days after Katrina hit. There was a great deal of fear and uncertainty throughout South Louisiana. Our residents here were watching 24-hour coverage of looting and unrest and civil disorders going on in New Orleans, and panicked reports of lawlessness, and then in the next report, reports of all the evacuees from New Orleans being bussed up here. So I think you had some local people here in the very early stages, the first few days after the storm, who were fearful, who were frightened, who did not know what the future was going to bring, and that may have increased the gun sales from the local residents. But I think you also had a number of law enforcement officials who wound up having to restock and resupply and who bought weapons and ammunition as well from the New Orleans area who had to come up here to get it. And then you also probably had a number of residents from the greater New Orleans area who were displaced up into here and felt like they needed protection if they were going to try to go back home to their houses at some point to check on them because, again, they're exposed to the 24-hour cable coverage of all of the looting and things that were going on in the city.
Yeah,
but I think it all peaked in the first few days. I would venture to guess that if you looked back at the sales over the past 2 weeks, they probably peaked within the first 3 or 4 days after the storm. And since then, once we've gotten everybody calmed down, once the rumor control has taken place and all of these rumors of looting and rioting and the things in the city, which absolutely did not occur, sort of took hold. I think everybody's a lot calmer now than they were 2 weeks ago.
Are there still concerns about tensions between the newcomers and the longtime residents of the city that there's some serious tensions there? Or
I think from a police standpoint, sure. We're apprehensive and a little concerned about what the future brings in terms of some of the criminal element from New Orleans possibly coming up here, whether it's strongly structured gangs or just individual criminals. It's no secret that New Orleans had one of the highest crime rates and murder rates per capita in America. And those people who had to leave the city who are criminals had to go somewhere. We don't know yet how many have landed in our city versus how many might be in Houston or St. Louis or Memphis or wherever. And so we are, along with other local law enforcement agencies and the help of the federal law enforcement in this community, going through neighborhoods now and trying to assess the situation. And, you know, the last thing we want to see is a New Orleans crime problem come up here and become our problem. With population increase, though, hand in hand with that generally goes a crime increase, so we've got to be prepared for that, and we're trying to be proactive and get out ahead of it before it has a chance to take root.
We're talking about some of the challenges faced by Baton Rouge as it tries to assimilate hundreds of thousands of people from New Orleans. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Let's take a call now from Lindsay, and she is in Baton Rouge. Hi, Lindsay.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Lindsay.
Hi. I wanted to say that I was one of the people a couple of days after the storm who bought, I call it my home security system, the 12-gauge pump-action shotgun. As I told my brother, I wouldn't live in New Orleans without a gun, so why am I going to live in the new New Orleans without one?
Well, now, number one, I have two questions. First of all, do you really know how to use that? I mean, have you?
Yes.
You do. And you're not afraid to, you're saying?
No. Not at all.
And you're calling Baton Rouge the new New Orleans. What does that mean when you say that? For those of us who don't live in the area, what do you mean, the new New Orleans?
Well, I mean, we are now the largest city. We do have so much so much attention now. This, the massive influx of people, you know, people of all types. You know, I know people who, you know, are just like me, sleeping on their friends' couches now, to, yeah, the people in the River Center who have nothing left and, you know, maybe do feel a little bit desperate. You know, it's just this little town has been transformed, and it's really been hard to even comprehend.
And it sounds like you're a little scared.
You know, I think I was more scared the first few days after the storm when things were really confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And the information maybe coming out of New Orleans wasn't great. I think the local media has done a really good job getting the facts out. Some of the national media maybe grabbed onto the looting stories a little too much. But the local media has done a much better job. I don't feel quite the same way I did Thursday after the storm when I bought the gun, but I'm still glad that I have it.
Okay. Well, Lindsay, thanks so much for your call and for telling us your situation there in Baton Rouge.
Thank you.
And Don Kelly, sergeant with the Baton Rouge Police Department, I love to hear your reaction to that call. It reflects some of what you had already told us, which is that it seems as though the greatest fear and tension was in the first few days. Maybe now it's settling back down. But it sounds like there's a lot of people out there with weapons, and I just don't know what kind of problems that might pose for the police department.
Nor do we. We would like to think that most everyone who went and bought those weapons last week or the week before are law-abiding citizens who bought them for self-protection and who will use them prudently if they have to be used at all. But certainly any large increase in the number of weapons on the streets, so to speak, has the potential to cause problems down the road, even if those gun owners are responsible. Homes are broken into, cars are broken into, weapons are stolen. So, you know, it's something we're monitoring and keeping an eye on as part of our overall long-term strategy to try and figure out how we as an agency, within the framework of the city government, try to respond to this. And it's literally a day-by-day process. As I've told people before, there's no precedent for this that I'm aware of in American history. There's no city that's gone through the huge population increase in such a short period of time as Baton Rouge has over the past 2 weeks, and so therefore there's no one we can call. There's no playbook we can pull off the shelf to look at and try and figure out, well, how did this play out in another city, because it's never really occurred. So we're up to the challenge. I think our men and women on the force have done a tremendous job over the past 2 weeks. Most of them have worked without a day off. We've stayed ahead of the situation here in town. We have not seen a large increase. In fact, we haven't seen any appreciable increase in crime in our city over the past 2 weeks. We have seen a huge increase in calls for service. Our calls for service are up over 50% over the past 2 weeks, but we've had the people and the manpower in the short term to address that, and now we just have to go from here to transition into a long-term strategy of what the future holds for this city.
Let's take a call from someone from another city, Barbara in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead.
The only thing that I was going to say is I've been involved at the Kelly USA Center, and I've been volunteering with family and friends, and it's been a great experience for me. But it wasn't until yesterday that I heard, overheard conversations of people claiming that the new the residents who are coming in are opportunistic, and how they're wanting handouts, and how come we're giving them housing when we have our own homeless, you know, people here in our town of San Antonio. I heard another person say that somebody came into the beauty parlor and was asking to have their nails done for free because they came in from the hurricane. And I know they're going to be those people who maybe make everybody else who's really displaced and hurting, make them look bad. And I'm afraid that people will lump all the new people coming to San Antonio as freeloaders. And I just don't feel that way. And I hope everybody can open up their hearts to them.
All right. Thanks so much. Barbara, thanks so much for your call and for those thoughts. And I guess, Sergeant Kelly, a similar situation you're hoping for there in Baton Rouge, that people will open up and everything will be smooth.
Undoubtedly, there are going to be cases of abuse, as she just mentioned. That's just, I don't know, that's par for the course. When you've got something on this larger scale, there are going to be some bad people. There are going to be people who will take advantage of the situation. But I have to tell you, just speaking for the evacuees, who have been housed here in Baton Rouge, I've spent several days along with most of our officers in and around the shelters where these folks have been housed for the past few weeks. They've lost everything. They've been taken away from their home, which in some cases no longer exists, with all of their possessions literally on their back, put into a shelter, put in close proximity with a lot of other people in the same situation. It's a situation that I don't think any of us can even comprehend what these folks are going through. And yet, I'll tell you, their resolve, their grace, their gratefulness, their appreciation for what we have done for them up here in Baton Rouge, and I'm sure this extends to other shelters elsewhere, has been very touching and very moving. For the most part, these are very good people in a very bad situation. And I hope, as the young lady just stated, that I would agree with her, that I hope that a few people don't cause a widespread perception that most of the folks who have been displaced as a result of this storm are, in fact, freeloaders or trying to take advantage of the system. That's not true. I think most folks just want to find a job, they want to find a home, and they want to get their lives back on track as much as they possibly can in the aftermath of this unbelievable tragedy.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Don Kelly is a sergeant with the Baton Rouge Police Department, and he joined us by phone from police headquarters in Baton Rouge. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Just how might Hurricane Katrina change the political landscape of Baton Rouge? Here now to help us answer that question is political analyst Elliot Stonecipher. He joins us by phone from his office in Shreveport, Louisiana. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Lynn. Good to be here.
First of all, maybe you could describe the political makeup of Baton Rouge before Hurricane Katrina.
You know, Lynn, it's kind of interesting. Baton Rouge has already gone through a tremendous change, and it's done that while it was actually shrinking. The background here is that, if you can imagine this, in 1970, Baton Rouge proper, the city, had 166,000 people in it, and then it grew by a third, 33%, by 1980, jumped up to 219,000 people. For 25 years, it stayed right there. I mean, we're literally at about 220,000, maybe 224, as we speak. So for 25 years, Baton Rouge didn't change in population, but it did change in a key political demographic, and that is that in 1980, it was 62% white, and now it's dropped all the way down to 46% white.
Mm-hmm.
It's just elected its first African-American mayor last November. Baton Rouge is, if what we're hearing is true, and 200,000 of the evacuees are now in Baton Rouge, that's literally a doubling of the city's population in 10 days.
It's hard to know whether that's going to be permanent, though. So how can you really start preparing for political change if you don't know how permanent that change?
You really can't, and that's one of the things that we're paying a lot of attention to, is what mechanism will there be for example, city council members, this new mayor, the state representatives and senators, to monitor, to measure that very issue so they can see how the demography of their residents, their voters, if you will, changes. That is something that's going to be very difficult because people don't even have to register to vote if they are permanently new residents of Baton Rouge. They may decide to vote absentee in New Orleans for many years. So this is one of the things we're trying to deal with. How will we know what is permanent? Now, certainly, we do know how many new houses are being bought. We know prices are up 30% virtually overnight. We know a lot of businesses have relocated from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. There's some sense of permanency to some of the numbers we're hearing. So that's a story that's going to unfold over the next, I would say, 6 months.
Well, one other aspect of this, if people who have been there for a long time are unhappy with change that's going on there, might they start leaving? I mean, are you going to see people going out of Baton Rouge?
Well, I think so, because one of the things that the story in Louisiana, not just Baton Rouge now, for 25 years has been out-migration. And I don't mean just the so-called white flight to neighboring parishes or towns, but all the way out of the state. Louisiana is only growing about, before Katrina, it was growing 1 or 2% per decade compared to 12%, 13% for the nation. It already wasn't growing because of out-migration. Many people in Baton Rouge chose to stay, and I'm sure now, given that it's just absolutely being overwhelmed with things as basic as traffic problems, many are going to revisit their decision to stay.
Yeah. Now, you said that elected officials need to get a handle on this, but how can they?
You know, that's one of the things they can do is that we know that some districts, and this information is available from the municipal government itself and or from voter registration statistics as they evolve, some districts didn't have any available housing, relatively. Other districts, city council districts or state representative or senate districts, did have a great amount of housing available. And the census in 2000, and to some degree intercensal estimates that come out every year, update available housing numbers. Water meters. There are all kinds of statistics that are going to be associated with people moving in, putting up deposits, relatively staying.
Elliot Stonecipher, we have to go now, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, thank you, Lynn.
Political analyst Elliot Stonecipher joining us from Shreveport, Louisiana. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.